Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio this fine spring morning in April 2016. I'm out and about, as you know, that you can hear. This short squib is going to be an interlude in our series on the body, which we've still got more to say about. But what this is, it's a counterblast to the prevalent notion of the master. This is a notion that pretty well all of the world's meditative cultures hold dear. It is, however, fraught with all kinds of difficulties, and as far as I can see, never actually helps an individual seeker, an individual inquirer. And it's a notion which is politically insidious as well. Now, I can see how people can argue for the idea that once you start self-inquiring, you start meditating, that you need a master. You certainly, in most cases, need some help, especially if you are alienated from your interiority, which happens to a lot of people, particularly if they're kind of quite successful in the ways of the world, because that is an accomplishment of extroversion. And I can see that you start an inquiry and you're definitely driven by a thirst to know or to find or to have the kind of intense experience and the transformation that's promised by many of the so-called spiritual discourses. I can see all that. After all, you land in an alien territory, you need a guide. And I'm not against the idea of people helping each other in this realm, but that the notion that you put yourself totally in the hands of another human being who's making some kind of suspicious claims about their efficacy in helping people on this terrain of being a guide and so forth. Anyway, the thing that got me going along this line was a tweet, I believe you call them, that I saw the other day. I'm not a great fan of Twitter, it's a bit fast for me, but I spotted this fairly fortuitously. Anyway, some Twitter person with a spiritual sounding name came out with this, and I think this is probably not far off verbatim. A reason you need a master is because he is the absolute authority, and so saves you from all argument and all debate. And I think that in virtue of being a tweet, you know, of having this enforced brevity on it, is the most revealing of the idiocy of this notion. Now, I've actually been coming at this for a long time and from various angles. I've particularly been lightly chewing on Nietzsche's first remark in the famous short genealogy of philosophy per se, which I think is called something like how the true world finally became a fable. Anyway, it's famous and it's in Twilight of the Idols. But right at the outset, Nietzsche remarks that in antiquity that the truth was thought of as something that could be embodied in a person. And it was their inquiry and their meditation and their enlightenment turned such people into sages, into embodiments of the truth, such that I, Plato, am the truth. And of course, this is still alive in spiritual culture. It's long been superseded in philosophical culture by many phases of development after that. But as we know, spiritual people live in the past very largely, and so they're kind of still stuck with this, to my mind, primitive idea. It strikes me, if you have an enlightenment experience, that you are then likely to interpret that experience and give some utterances to the world out of that interpretation. But it seems to me pretty unequivocal that there's a difference between an intense experience and the interpretation of that experience. These are two completely different things, yeah. And these experiences remain interpretable. And this is where we get the problem, really, because people have those experiences and interpret them metaphysically. It becomes this, the experience is so impactful, it's so vivid, it's so impressive, it's so transformative, that we interpret it metaphysically and we say, this is how things are, this is how the universe is, this is how the human being is. And of course, all that you can really say, unless you admit to practicing hermeneutics at the outset, all you can honestly say is, well, I had this intense experience, full stop. Now, this statement that I just recounted to you, that appeared on Twitter, is of that kind of sage type, you know? Well, actually, whether the person had an experience that pushed him into this mode of utterance, this mode of authoritarian utterance, or not, is a question to be asked, you know. This person might just have learnt the role, how to act the role, how to play the game, how to put on the costume and the makeup, and go onto the stage, and the lights go up, and the whole thing's a fucking performance. And of course, a lot of this stuff is, you know, because you can make money and get prestige and power by gathering a horde of zombies around you. And actually, this statement is just designed to produce a zombie. I nearly replied, but I didn't. I'll restrain myself these days. My inner troll is having a sleep, thankfully. But I could tell you what I was tempted to say. I was tempted to say, yes, renounce your autonomy, forsake critical thinking, and learn to goose step. Because basically what the guy is offering here is the mechanism of fascism. You know, have no critical faculty. Never enter into argument or debate. What? Well, people who don't think are basically, certainly people who don't think critically, are just basically just up there to be manipulated. You know? They're kind of cannon fodder for whatever ideological game their master is playing. I mean, it's preposterous to expect this of people, and politically disastrous when it does happen, as we've seen time and time again. And so the master's going to be the absolute authority. Absolute authority. Every question is going to be referred to this person. And this presumes that the person can answer every fucking conundrum or query or life difficulty you're likely to encounter. In other words, they're claiming some kind of omniscience. And again, this is, you know, this is the claim, you know, I Guru BDI, I'm the truth. Believe it. You know, and it's playing out this primitive notion of truth that Nietzsche pointed out, and that has long been superseded by people who can mount a bit of critical awareness. So I suppose I'm advising you, dear listeners, to really just don't go along with this claptrap. If you're making an inquiry, you're making an inquiry. And you're not the same as everybody else. Even if you come from a very regimented and authoritarian society, you still are individually you. I mean, we know this. Psychedelic drugs affect people differently. Kundalini awakenings affect people differently. Being in love affects people differently. Every kind of impressive experience happens to an individual and receives an individual articulation and is interpreted by that individual also in their own way, according to their own concept, architecture and mental furniture. This guru thing, I mean, it's this master thing that our tweeter put out there, is presupposing that everybody's the same, and they're not. And they're presupposing that, as opposed to inquiry, our spiritual life ought to be one of simply following rules, regulations and directives given out by our master, which again, which in turn presupposes that, you know, there are maps for this stuff, and that and that the spiritual life is one of procedures along trodden pathways. Of course it's not. That world of interiority is a pathless land. It's individually varied. Okay, I mean, we can talk about it. There is some generality as well. But there's also this massive uniqueness to everybody's affair with their interiority.
The other assumption,
of course, is that somebody can know everything enough to be the absolute authority over somebody else. They can't. If we were to ask the Buddha or Lao Tzu about quantum physics or about dark matter, he wouldn't have a clue. He doesn't know everything. In fact, the people I trust are the ones who are prepared to say, actually, I know jack shit. You know, but they've got some kind of warmth about their being and some love about their encounter with others. Then I'm kind of a bit less inclined to be distrustful. So anyway, guys, I'm recommending that you kind of just ignore this kind of shit, basically. Don't think that people can't help you. They can. But a good helper recognises that that is what they are. You know, they're a companion, a catalyst maybe. Somebody you can share stuff with about your experiences and so forth. You know, there are many ways, and even though I say that helping is a great skill, it's a great and complex skill and a nuanced skill. Some people have it, but they won't be your master, and they won't kind of try and dictate every aspect of your life. The most you'll get from somebody genuine is a suggestion, or even just like a hint that you turn your head a little bit to the left or the right, or you look up or you look down, metaphorically speaking. See what real helping is like. Yeah. Real helping actually is often just a matter of being there for somebody, because they must make their own inquiry. What they find is what they find. You cannot discover what they need to discover. They must do it for themselves. Don't matter how good you are, you can't do it for them. So, unless you really are a devotee of the late Adolf Hitler, I would really, honestly, ignore any bug-eyed monster that invites you to get a lobotomy or become a zombie. Okay, that's my diatribe. And Maddie will return to this and expand and get into nuances and so forth. I shall now invite you to listen to the birds and the distant traffic. Really is a beautiful day, and there's some guys fishing down there. It's very peaceful. Anyway, speak soon.